O magnum mysterium, O great mystery and wonderful sacrament, that animals should see the newborn Lord lying in a manger. Blessed is the Virgin whose womb was worthy to bear our Savior. I'm not sure how many of you knew the Latin that we just heard. The translation of this morning's offertory, written how many years ago, is 1570-something. And how many choirs have sung it in praise? And thank you to our brave choir members for taking it on. A majestic piece. Tomas Luis de Victoria wrote this text sometime in the late 16th century, celebrating the birth of a mysterious life, witnessed, perhaps ironically, first by animals in a lowly manger, born of a simple woman whose body was so worthy and so welcoming. If you were to imagine a culture so steeped in this mystery, so constructed around an idea of beauty and blessing and theological awe, where would that construct be in your mind? Where would it reside? In my mind, it can only be something that is in the middle, right? With all things, all life moving around it. It would be in the center. It is that from which all understanding emanated, this amazing, spectacular mystery, right in the middle. We are born of that tradition, culturally at least, even if we did not each grow up in a God-centered home. Our Unitarian Universalist faith is a product of that centering, even as we have historically argued with the Trinity. What I want us to imagine this morning is the predominance of this construct, this holy mystery in the center, in the middle, that we have called God for many, many years. Imagine the tenure of its authority and thus its weight and power, its capacity for organizing perspective and relationships. And now, fast forward from Tomas Luis, from the eras of rationalizing dominance and empire as a proof of God's intention and favor, fast forward from the culture of our Puritan forebears, who certainly centered the same thread of theology, if not the specifics, fast forward to the rational inclinations of the early and mid-20th century, and into the culture shifts of the 1960s and more recently, and imagine. Just imagine what it has meant to take that great mystery, that magnum mysterium, that blessed construct around which life had revolved for so many, for so long, to take that symbol, that which we have called God, out of the center. Imagine the whole left as we have decentered God. Because even though there are still believers among us, still those who find grace in the ancient ideas, I would suggest that for our culture, for the larger picture that is 21st century life, God has been decentered. Imagine the whole. So I'm going to ask you to stick with me this morning, because the point I'm trying to make is not necessarily linear, but it is relevant, I hope, so hang in there. I think we are lost right now. We are lost in the void, and too often we are lost to each other. Let's look at that decenter word a little bit so that we can be sure we're on the same page, so we won't be lost to each other just this minute. Decenter was apparently first coined or used in a publicly recorded way as long ago as the 1870s. A little preliminary research suggests that among psychologists, at least, decentering means not having to believe all our thoughts. So the example given was that when one thinks to oneself, I can't do anything right, one needs to learn that that is not reality, but a thought. And it may not, in fact, be true. Decentering in psychology is distinguishing what we think from what really is. But more contemporarily, we hear the word used in conjunction with things like whiteness, for example. Decentering whiteness is more in keeping with how I am using the term today, the idea of taking white, or for our conversation, God, out of the middle, out of the position of power, acknowledging that the white way of doing things or the God construct is not the only way, or perhaps even the best way. So let's think back a little bit. When I mentioned earlier the hole left by taking the previously prevailing theological construct, the God construct, out of the middle, how did that feel to you? Did it feel like a loss, like an emptiness? Did it feel like a victory? Or did it feel nothing in particular? Has that been your default mode already, perhaps? We know that a significant percentage of Unitarian Universalists have shifted their theologies over the last 40 to 50 years, that we, like many who have left more dogmatic churches or who never ascribed to monotheistic belief to begin with, have already a different perspective or understanding. We may have already decentered. Decentering, according to an article in a website called thoughtco.com, it's an amazing place to visit. Decentering is a way of understanding the world in its social and psychological aspects that holds that there is no single way to read an event or institution or text. Gathering varied experiences from many individuals produces greater fidelity, they say, such that an explanation of an event based on a decentered approach will acknowledge many different interpretations from many different individuals. This may sound familiar. It's a little bit like the definition of Unitarian Universalism, right? Many perspectives. But here's what caught my eye recently, and it was particularly clear the other day when I was reading a sermon by a colleague of mine who serves a federated church, which is a Christian-leaning church that uses God language comfortably. She wrote about God-imaged humans in her sermon, and I realized that we can't do that here because we don't see God language. We don't use God language in any shared sense of the word. And I know we certainly can't use shared God language in the world at large, so then the question becomes, how do we speak in ways that we understand together? When push comes to shove, and as we have become more secularized than we have historically been, what is in the middle of how we understand the world and our place in it now? My fear is that over the last half century or so, we have put ourselves there. We have, in effect, put human beings and human life in the middle. We have put our capacity, our needs, our curiosity, our very existence smack dab in the middle. And my concern is that it's not working very well. If everything in our lives were copacetic and we didn't have big things to worry about, like climate change, for example, or the reality of finite resources or economic inequality or nuclear annihilation, if those weren't concerns, then what's in the center might not be an issue. Although I suspect the average life events, our life crises, our losses, might provide enough fodder for concern. So I don't think we're in a worry-free zone, and I suspect it's not anywhere we could be when we practice the hubris of putting ourselves in the middle. Theologian Paul Tillich suggests that religion is the invention of humanity that allows us to be ultimately concerned. If what we have done is put human beings in the center as our ultimate concern, then I fear we will be failing our world as a whole. I suspect in the last half century or more, we have suffered from a lack of imagination, where meaning-making is concerned, a lack of humility. We have let ourselves in this Western developed environment, at least, be more engaged with things like safety or comfort or progress, longevity or happiness. Is it wrong to want those things? Of course not. But I wonder how it has served us as a global community to be so much more self-oriented and thus less relational and everything else with everything else that is. I am not an advocate for going back to the sweeter, gentler time of Christocentric existence. William Sloane Coffin, excuse me, writes about how we, in the Protestant world at least, clung to a childlike theology that allowed us to imagine maintaining the status quo, and that our clergy leaders resisted challenging it because it was easier to comfort the afflicted than to afflict the comfortable. Perhaps it is akin to chasing the same dogs over and over again. Still, there is something about the way we oriented our lives towards something greater and more mysterious in the middle than we ourselves are, and that might be worth reclaiming. If you got up really early this morning, you may have listened to a podcast from 2012 with Krista Tippett and the Buddhist practitioner Joan Halifax. Did anybody happen to hear it? I recommend it. They covered a lot of territory, but referenced the idea of mass secularization. That was how Halifax framed it. I found it ironic that when a guest to the show asked about meditation, Halifax suggested it is now referred to as a reflective practice, because the word meditation is so weighted. I know prayer was complicated, certainly among us. But now I guess I need to refer to our meditation as reflective practice. Halifax, of course, did not reference decentering God, but did concur that we are in an amazing time of search. We yearn, she suggested, for a new enlightenment. When I first started thinking about what we have lost by way of a theological center, it felt particularly poignant given our current political and global concerns, and how it feels that we are challenged almost daily with a new event or crisis, just as Cindy suggested. I wondered, having not been here last week, if Joe mentioned the horrendous loss of life in Las Vegas. But then this week we are witness to unprecedented fires in California that are sweeping through communities, leaving so many homeless. And don't forget Puerto Rico, still struggling to recover from hurricanes. And just this morning, news of an IED exploding in Somalia. Halifax referenced this morning compassion fatigue, preferring actually a term she calls empathic distress. That we are so overwhelmed with events and images that we wish were different. And remember, this episode was taped in 2012. She missed the whole last election. In this morning's chalice lighting, there was a reference to humbling humanness and bringing new hope. I think that might be a good place to start looking for our new enlightenment. Not so much with ourselves in mind, but the broader life that we share with all beings, sentient and otherwise. I noted in a recent article out of the University of Arkansas a similar thought. The decentering of humanity results in an uplifting of life itself, the author says, arguing that when we look beyond our human sphere, we open up the possibility of constructing a shared perspective something alive and something akin, perhaps, to that new enlightenment that we're looking for. Instead of chasing the same theological dogs that we have chased for so long, maybe we need to reframe our focus and find new ways to be in conversation about words that have mattered to us but need new lenses. It may be that God is still at the center for some of you. If not, then what might be? And how might we share our perspectives to find common ground? I mentioned putting humility in the center. I might add awe or wonder, an acknowledgement of the mysteries in life that we cannot fully understand. Again, in this morning's podcast, a young woman asked Halifax about reflective practice, about how to get started. She wanted, she said, to dip her toe in the water, but she wasn't quite ready to dive in. Did she have to cross her legs when she sat to meditate? Did she have to sit for 20 minutes? Start with 5 minutes, Halifax suggested. Someday you might be ready for 10. And then maybe in time you'll practice for an hour. Perhaps we each need to simply get started with our wondering, to start practicing taking ourselves out of the middle, our human and humanity selves, and imagine what putting life itself right there might look like and might feel like, so that when we are overwhelmed, as we so often are these days, or challenged, as we so often are these days, or when we want to celebrate and praise as we would like to imagine we can, we might have a construct to share. If we each started with 5 minutes, it might grow, and we could discover together a hope-filled center, a place to hold our fears and our dreams, our joys and our worries, with this huge magnum mysterium, this great mystery we call life. Whatever we find, here's the beginning. Take ourselves out of the center. Ironically, the closing hymn for today that was in your order of service is called Comfort Me. And I thought, well, that just doesn't feel quite right when we're trying to find new things to put in the middle and new ways of imagining.